Welcome to the Christian Science Monitor. I'm Philip Moore for Radio Reading Services. This week I'm reading from the July 29th, 2019 edition of the Christian Science Monitor Weekly. The cover story this week, The Prairie Generation. Young people are returning to farms on the Great Plains, bringing a new dynamism to rural America. The story is by Lauren Pelsey of the Christian Science Monitor. As is our habit each week, let's first begin with an introductory article by editor Mark Stappenfield, which will provide some context and background for the feature story. Mr. Stappenfield's column this week, The New Frontier of Rural America. In his new book, The Second Mountain, author and columnist David Brooks examines a truth that seems particularly poignant. The things we spend so much of our lives pursuing are often not the things that truly bring us joy. How easy it can be to value individual achievement, recognition, and influence as goals in themselves, and how often those who reach them find them ultimately unsatisfying, like a bank account that never fills, no matter how much money we put into it. That is why the stories of twins Matt and Joe Brugger and of Taylor Walker seem to carry a spark of wisdom. Staff writer Lauren Pelsey talked to them for this week's cover story, chronicling how they are part of a nascent trend among some young people to go back to rural America and even life on the farm. At this point, it's unclear how big that trend will be, but there's something of the mindset that matters beyond numbers. Consider how Lauren describes their journey back to rural America. One professor told the Brugger twins, who now run a beef and agricultural business in Albion, Nebraska, the best thing you can do for your community is find what you love to do, start a business around it, and hire people to come back, and show other young people that you can do what you love in a rural community. End of quote. Mr. Walker decided to open a restaurant in Gothenburg, Nebraska, when he considered how the community of Gothenburg treated my dad with his businesses. If they continue that for me, then I owe it to them to be here. End of quote. Mr. Stappenfield continues, as I wrote in this column a few months ago, I had something of an epiphany when I visited a small Midwestern college recently. I saw how, amid all the views of Instagram-addled youth, they are dealing with an existential question, the very question Mr. Brooks raises. They see that the markers of adulthood, a job, a degree, a home, did not necessarily make their parents happy. So what does bring a deeper joy? Mr. Brooks argues that the deepest joy comes from knitting oneself, heart and soul, into something larger, a vocation, a family, a philosophy or faith, or a community. The good news is that what we give to our community in pennies, our communities give back to us in dollars, he writes. Many things are needed to help rural America thrive. Universal access to high-speed internet would be nice. New ideas and enormous persistence are a must. But something else is just as essential. In their book about revitalizing small-town America, authors James and Deborah Fallows chose the title very carefully, Our Towns. Rural America needs the Brugger twins and Mr. Walker not just for their energy and fresh thinking, but also for the love they have for those communities. For them, Albion and Gothenburg are their towns. Perhaps towns like theirs can be a new frontier in answering the question of what brings deeper joy, supporting the realization that some investments pay back in much more than money. Christian Science Monitor editor Mark Stappenfield can be reached at his email address, editor, E-D-I-T-O-R, at csmonitor.com. And now for this week's cover story by Lauren Pelsey, Return to the Land. Young people are moving back to the farms on the Great Plains. Can they save rural America? Unadilla, and Albion, Nebraska. Outside Unadilla, Hannah Esch walks into her cooler and pulls out packages of ribeye brisket and hamburger. Over the past 9 months, her new company, Oak Barn Beef, sold out of meat 4 times and brought in $52,000 in sales. Over the next year, she expects to double those sales numbers. That will be a milestone. It will also be when she finishes her last year of college. Some 150 miles northwest, the Burger Twins, Matt and Joe, show off how they're diversifying from traditional agriculture. They directly market the beef from the cows they raise, and they grow hops for local microbreweries. But the most visible sign of their commitment to the rural plains is the two-story farmhouse they're renovating on the family homestead. "We've just gotten to a point where we can live here," says Matt, who moved in with his brother in May. It represents free housing, a key attraction for the budding entrepreneurs who have more ideas than dollars. But it's more than that. It's the place their great-grandfather bought when he moved here from Switzerland. It's where their grandfather was born and where they played as children when the house was later rented by people who kept sheep. "We always wanted to be back in rural economic development," says Matt, "but it wasn't clear until college what that would mean, which was going back to the family farm." The twins graduated in May. There's a new generation of rural entrepreneur returning to the Great Plains. Unlike those who take over a conventional farm and help make it bigger and more efficient, these enterprising young people are starting small and unconventional operations. And unlike previous generations, they aren't going off to big cities to acquire skills and then returning after a decade or two. Instead, these young people who straddle the end of the millennial generation and the beginning of Generation Z are often coming home right away. It's not clear how big the movement is and whether it can reverse the population decline that's gone on for a century in the rural plains. But if energy combined with business and social media savvy can overcome demographic decline, then perhaps these youthful entrepreneurs, the first generation born after the farm crisis of the 1980s, have an opportunity to do it. There is a spirit in these young people that is different from anything I've ever experienced, says Tom Field, director of the 8-year-old Engler Agribusiness Entrepreneurship Program at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Of the 120 or more of its alumni, 90% of them say their goal is to return, or they choose to live in, a small or rural community. These are students who have had international experiences, had internships on both coasts, but they choose to live and work and play in places where they have a deep affinity with the culture, the people, and the landscape. It's not just would-be farmers who are returning. Taylor Walker was a year or so away from getting his teaching degree at Mid Plains Community College in North Platte, Nebraska, when his father called wondering if he wanted to start a restaurant back home. That would be Gothenburg, Nebraska, a city of 3,448 with no stoplights and a big grain elevator just before the railroad tracks. His father, who had run a succession of restaurants in town, had retired and sold his steakhouse in 2016. Gothenburg got in a panic when it was gone, says Mr. Walker. "My father thought it might be a good idea to start a new one." So Mr. Walker skipped the degree and last September opened Tea Walkers on Main Street. It's much smaller than his dad's steakhouse, but more centrally located, just between Yancey Insurance Agency and Ribbons and Roses, a floral shop. Employees of the two banks across the street come over to enjoy a menu that runs from sirloin steak to grilled trout. They've got the best hot beef sandwich, says resident Verlin Jansen. Well, I moved back to the rural community anyway. I'm not a real fan of the big cities, says Mr. Walker. And I had seen how the community of Gothenburg treated my dad with his businesses. If they continue that for me, then I owe it to them to be here. When the Burger Trends first started thinking about a return to the rural plains, their initial idea was to do something in business development. Then they met with Dr. Field of the Engler Program at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. He urged them to be role models instead. He was the first one to say, "The best thing you can do for your community is find what you love to do, start a business around it, and hire people to come back and show other young people that you can do what you love in a rural community," Matt recalls. "We completely changed our perspective." Now, the recent college graduates run their own company, Upstream Farms. They have 50 cows. They market the beef directly, mostly to the training table program at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, which serves high-quality foods to student-athletes. They raise hops for nearby craft breweries, and because the university takes only the best cuts of beef, the twins sell the rest of their meat as hamburger to the boutique beer firms. You grow up and you get to college, and it's all about the industrialization side of agriculture, says Matt. We like to tip our hat to the way that things used to be. This way of life, where you had hogs, cows, sheep, chickens. You grew four or five different kinds of crops, all on one piece of land. We like to say that we're twin brothers farming the Midwest, putting new ideas on old dirt and connecting our customers back to the land. Those new ideas don't always get the support of their father, Norman Brugger. 2 years ago, I said, "Dad, we need to grow more cover crops," Joe recalls. He explained the benefits of raising a crop over the winter to help build up a root system in the soil, which would allow them to use less fertilizer. Cover crops are nothing new. Grandpa understood it, Joe adds. It was Dad who was like, "What? We're going to plant again after the harvest?" Norman agreed to an experiment with 80 acres, but in the spring, when they went to kill the crop to get ready for planting corn and soybeans, weeds started sprouting in the field because the cover crop seed had been contaminated. "It was one of those things where I thought I knew what I was talking about," Joe says, "and it just fell on its face." Cover crops have been abandoned for the moment. Perhaps that caution springs from Norman's experience. He started farming in 1983, near the start of the worst farm crisis since the 1930s. At the time, farmers were going out of business because they had accumulated so much debt buying land at inflated prices during the booming 1970s. When interest rates skyrocketed and crop prices and land values plummeted during the 1980s, farmlenders could no longer justify the debt that farmers were carrying. While others were selling out, Norman started buying land. It paid off in the long run, but required him and his young family to live frugally while crop prices were depressed. A drought didn't help. According to family lore, the twins' older sister didn't see rain until she was 3 years old. So when the twins proposed building a distillery, their parents responded, "That's really risky, guys," Matt recalls. They go, "You guys don't know what it's like to live in really, really hard times." And they're right. We're privileged not to have known that. And so we do take more risk. And I think that maybe someday it'll catch up with us. But maybe not, he adds. Starting a business anywhere is risky, but in rural America, it's even harder. That's partly because of a declining population means a shrinking market of customers. You definitely have to pay attention to what the town has to offer, says Mr. Walker, the restaurateur who's following in his father's footsteps. Gothenburg does a very good job. They brought in Frito-Lay, which buys corn from local farmers. The town has so many opportunities that it helps keep the people here. Stability is fragile on the prairie. Despite the good times, Gothenburg has lost more than 3% of its population since 2010, which puts it back to where it was in 1980, before the farm crisis. In rural Nebraska, however, that counts as a roaring success. Many school children learn about the Homestead Act, the 1862 law that opened up the western frontier to settlers with the lure of 160 acres of free federal land. But few outside Nebraska knew about the Kincaid Act of 1904, which did the same for the Sandhills and the rest of north central and western Nebraska. Because the land was arid, the Kincaid Act gave each homesteader 640 acres, a square mile of land, four times what the Homestead Act had offered. The western half of the state's population skyrocketed. Already in eastern Nebraska, however, there were troubling signs of decline. In 21 of the state's 93 counties, the population had peaked by 1900. One of them, Otto County, where Miss Ash runs her cattle, had seen its population grow sixfold in the three decades from the outbreak of the Civil War to 1890, but then it went into a long, slow decline. It lost nearly half of its residents through 1990, before rebounding a bit. The rapid surge from the Kincaid Act also began to wane soon enough. By 1940, the population had peaked in more than two-thirds of Nebraska's counties, covered by the law, including Boone County, where the Brugers live. Using machinery that got ever bigger each decade, farmers consolidated their holdings, and towns started to disappear. When the twins' great-grandfather moved here from Switzerland, he lived in Akron, a small community built in anticipation of a railroad that never came through. The country store, dance hall, and church are long gone. The twins' address is now Albion, even though the town center is 13 miles away. The decline in population not only crimps the numbers of people rural businesses can sell their wares to, but also reduces their labor pool. After graduating from Hastings College in Hastings, Nebraska, Jamie and Rush stayed on to do video production for a regional bank based there. During that stint, he started his own video production company on the side, and when he realized it was viable, struck out on his own full time. What he didn't count on was the lack of local specialized talent. I was having difficulty finding the right people, he says. Instead of finding a dependable number two employee for his company, the position became a revolving door, he says. So this year, he sold his company to a marketing agency, which was wanting to bring video production in-house. He now works for the firm, and in June, moved to Lincoln, the state capital, where the company is based. His relocation to the big city is symbolic of a troubling trend for rural Nebraska. Between 2000 and 2010, the typical rural county in the state, one with no town of 2,500 or more, lost nearly half of its population of 20 to 24-year-olds, according to the Center for Public Affairs Research at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. That is partially offset by a 16% net in-migration of 30 to 34-year-olds, presumably people who have worked elsewhere and are now wanting to return to the Great Plains. But it's not enough to reverse the overall trend of Nebraskans settling urban and suburban areas. In 2010, the two counties containing Omaha and Lincoln, as well as the county between them, represented just over half of Nebraska's entire population. By 2050, they're projected to account for two-thirds. The state's rural counties are expected to lose population over that time. But for Ms. Esch, the future is bright with entrepreneurial possibilities. Her main customers are moms and old men, she says. The former are attracted by the beef that's coming directly from the farmer. The latter want to eat that kind of steak they remember from their youth. She has the meat butchered and wrapped, then ships it out in boxes ranging from 10 to 25 pounds. She's gotten so experienced at shipping frozen meat that she's thinking of doing it for other small beef companies, eventually doing custom butchering as well. And then, I would love to own a storefront that incorporates something else, she says. Whether that's a cooking classes at night for beef or a coffee shop in the morning and beef shipment throughout the day. Even if the new generation of entrepreneurs succeeds in their attempts to work the soil, the question is whether they can really help revive the rural Midwest. In my area, I'm going to guess more people will move in just because we are so close to Lincoln and Omaha. The people can still live this lifestyle, but have the great jobs, says Miss Esch, bouncing along a rolling gravel road in her pickup. How do you go live in the city after this? But the rural parts of Nebraska and other states that aren't close to a metropolitan area might be another matter. Miss Esch's own future is uncertain because her father is getting out of the cattle business. By next February, even before she graduates, she could be down to 30 cows for her business, and it's not clear she will stay in Unadilla. I think the communities that continue to innovate and make it a great place for people to live will have more people, she says. But the ones that don't are going out of business. That concludes the main article from this edition of the Christian Science Monitor Weekly. Here is a side piece related to the main article. There's no place like home. There's no place like ... In contrast to the new rural entrepreneurs who come back right after school, Casey Cagle did what many rural baby boomers and Gen Xers did. They left in their 20s, worked somewhere else, then came back to start businesses or take over farms. It's tempting to call this the typical route for Plains returnees. In Mr. Cagle's case, it was anything but typical. A lot of people have the mentality there's always something bigger and better somewhere else. You know, kind of like a fear of mediocrity, he says. So, I wanted to get out and see everything. But after graduating from high school in southeast Kansas, he stayed put for 8 years, playing in bands and helping restore an old theater in Emporia, before packing up in his 60s-era pickup with a leaky gas tank and a camper on top. He traveled the country for 18 months, doing odd jobs and playing his guitar gigs. He was on his way to Asheville, North Carolina, when he met a man who told him about his great job as a tour guide, he recalls. He was the one that said, "Wow, you'd be really perfect for that job because you basically live in a tour vehicle the whole time and travel around." So Mr. Cagle applied online with a California-based company, got the job, and sold the truck to move out west. For the next 4 years, he gave tours, first in the United States and increasingly overseas. He joined a sister company in Australia to give tours in the outback until his visa ran out after a year. "I was all set to go back out to California, but I'd been out of the country so long, I really wanted a summer back in Kansas," he recalls. "I guess I kind of wanted to find out if it still felt like home to me." It did. He opened his own company, Prairie Earth Tours, specializing in the Flint Hills region of Kansas, which contains the world's largest remaining expanse of tall grass prairie. 3 years in, he's happy with his decision. Most people say, "Oh, you'll outgrow Kansas. You'll move on from that once you get out and see other things." Nope, I still feel like the same way, maybe more than before I left, he says. This is a fantastic place. That was written by the main author of the main article, Lauren Belzy. And with that, we have concluded our time together for this week. I'm Philip Moore for Radio Reading Services. Join me again next week when we take a look at another edition of the Christian Science Monitor Weekly here on the radio that reads to the Tri-State. Thanks for joining me.